scripture reading this morning? Yeah. Well, don't get your hopes up. The prodigal God. I don't know if you made the connection yet or not, but this simple little story is the story of the entire human race. No one is left out. We're all on the outside looking in. You remember the stories in Genesis chapter 3 and 4? There are two stories there of two, if you will, fateful events in man's early history. The first one is in chapter 3, and because they had wanted to be their own God, Adam and Eve had been driven out from their home. Verses 23 and 24 of chapter 3 says, "So the Lord God banished him from the Garden of Eden to work the ground from which he had been taken. After he drove the man out, he placed on the east side of the Garden of Eden cherubim and a flaming sword flashing back and forth to guard the way of the tree of life. Now they lived east of Eden." They can't go back home. Now they're forced to till the land for food. And I've wondered in the reality of that, if there were not times as they lived east of Eden that when they took a break to wipe the sweat and cool off, if they didn't walk to the top of a hill somewhere and look over into that beautiful valley, that garden where they used to be, and long for home, and see some favorite places where they had sat and talked with God. There was a second event in chapter 4. Cain has murdered his brother. God has placed an additional curse on him. The earth from which now, for which he had been forced to till, and which evidently he had grown very attached to, he had forced the earth's mouth open and made her drink his brother's blood. And now she was never going to open her mouth for him again. She'll no longer respond to his efforts to grow crops. And in chapter 4, beginning in verse 13, the reality of what he has lost sets in. Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you're driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, he will suffer vengeance seven times over." Then the Lord, mercifully, I might add, put a mark on Cain so that no one who found him would kill him. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod. And the word Nod means wandering. Lived in the land of wandering east of Eden. Here's our reality. We all live east of Eden. But God didn't design us to live in this sin-cursed world, to live in constant insecurity and uncertainty and fear and decay and disease and disappointment and death. But the problem is lived out in every single one of our lives. We wanted to be our own master. And even though we would never say it, we wanted to be God. And some of us chose the path of the younger son. And we tried to get around God by rebellion and wrongdoing. Some of us chose the path of the older son to get control of God by right doing. But in the end, both paths lead away from home. And we wake up on the outside, east of Eden. We forfeited our right to live there. We have absolutely no claim that would get us back in. We brought the curse upon ourselves. And so now here we are, east of Eden, desperately trying to recreate home in this sin-cursed world. And it's not the way that we very often look at it, but sometimes we seem to be rather successful in creating a home. But jobs vanish. Houses rot. Banks go broke. Stock markets crash. Cars rust. Families fall apart. Our bodies fail. And even in a best case scenario, where most of our plans have worked and we've accumulated some wealth and we have our family around us and they're healthy and they're well and we're growing older in years, we die. Our loved ones die. And we can't stop it, east of Eden. Nothing lasts. There is no real security. And what we sense as security remains just out of reach of our fingertips. We just, if we think we have it, we can't hold it. And so most grow cynical and say, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. And you hope you die before your money runs out. But even if you do, and if it does, and whether it does or not, as we sense death approaching, we grow afraid. And we cry along with Paul, what a wretched man I am. Who will deliver me from this body of death? Romans chapter 7, verse 24. Is there any way back home? Let me tell you a little simple story of an incident that changed my life. Back about 1969. Shortly after Janice and I got married, I was a college student at the time, and I would go over and attend church at White's Ferry Road in West Monroe, Louisiana, where Janice attended. And among the people that I met there were the Jennings brothers, Coy and Doyle. Coy was the oldest and Doyle was a little younger. And Doyle had played some professional football. They were both big, massive guys, 275 up. Both of them had played football. But Doyle had played some professional ball, and so I looked up to Doyle. And I kind of like to hang out with him. And he kind of took me under his wing a little bit. And one Friday, or one evening, I don't know what day it was, he called and asked me what I was doing on the next Friday. And I thought, we're going to go to a ball game, and we're going to go do something together. So I quickly said nothing. And he said, well, I'm going to come by and pick you up, and we're going to a men's retreat at church. Well, he actually tricked me because I wasn't at that point in my life in a very good mode of going to men's retreat at church, to say the least, at that time. And so he set me up and he immediately hung the phone up. And so the next Friday came and I was really pretty angry at him and had said I wasn't going to be there, but when it came down to it, I didn't have the courage not to be there, so I was there and kind of pouted a little bit, but anyway, I went with him and sat through the men's retreat, anxious to get home. After the retreat was over, they had a campfire. And so I sat back in the very back row of that campfire and by myself because I was pretty angry at him still for tricking me into this. And something happened that probably not very many people in the world remember, but it changed my life. These two men, these two brothers, the younger one, Doyle, who played some professional ball, got up and he stood in front of, I guess, a couple of hundred or 150 or so men, and He began to tell a story about when he was playing ball, that he had allowed his life to get completely out of control. That he was involved in some things that he shouldn't have been involved in, and he knew that it was wrong, but it was just part of the lifestyle. And he told a story about his older brother, Coy. He said one night, actually in the early morning hours, somebody started beating on my door. And he lives somewhere to the north. I don't know where. I don't remember where he said it was. And he said, I drug myself out of bed and went and opened the door, and there was my brother, Coy. And I was shocked because he lived 14 hours away. And he said, when I opened the door, he looked at me and he said, Doyle, the way that you're living leads to hell. You're lost. And I don't want you to die that way because I love you. And he turned around and went and got back in his car and drove 14 hours back home. And as he was telling that story, his brother was there. Both of them at that time were deacons in the church. And his brother got up and came up and put his arms around him. And both of them stood there crying like two big babies. And I'm sitting here watching this and thinking, they've got something that I don't have. And both of them became, and all repented and came back to the Lord and was a deacon now at the church. And so I want to say to you, there is a way back home. In Luke chapter 15, Jesus tells three stories. The first story was a story about a shepherd who had 100 sheep, and one of them wandered off, and instead of it cutting his losses, he goes out and he searches until he finds that lost sheep. And he picks it up and brings it home, and then he calls for a celebration. And then he immediately tells a second story, and it's about a woman who had 10 silver coins in her house, and she loses one of them, but instead of writing it off as a loss, she lights a lamp and sweeps the whole house and searches diligently until she finds it. And when she does, she calls her neighbors and friends, and they rejoice with her. And so by the time we get to the third story, we've picked up the M.O., haven't we? We know how it goes. We know the pattern. Something is lost. Someone goes looking for it, and they refuse to stop until they find what was lost. And when they do, then they call in the relatives and friends and neighbors, and they rejoice. And so in Jesus' story, when the younger son is lost, then we expect to hear that the next thing is that somebody sets out in search for him. But they don't. And it's a shock. And he means for it to be, and he set it up exactly that way. In March the 12th, 1965, Life magazine, which no longer exists, there was printed a story entitled A Haunted Man's Perilous Search. 65, Vietnam comes to mind. It's a true story of Lieutenant Daniel Dawson, who was a pilot that was shot down over Vietnam in November 1964. And his 25-year-old brother, Donald, who sold everything that he could, left his family in California and flew to Vietnam and began searching the gorilla-infested jungle for his younger brother. And he had printed up and he passed out leaflets picturing both the light reconnaissance plane that his brother had been flying when he went down and also describing the reward that he was offering for finding his brother. And he became quite the figure in Vietnam. He became known to both American and Vietnamese soldiers as the brother of the pilot. A later follow-up article reports how he spent a total of 9 months in the jungles of Vietnam, the last four of them as a prisoner of the Viet Cong. And he said, they told me he was dead. and gave me a flight vest he wore and then told me to go. He never saw the grave, but he was given the instructions to return after the war, and they would take him to the grave site of his brother. That's what the elder brother in the story should have done. He should have said, "Father, my brother's been a fool, and now his life is in ruins, but I'll go find him and bring him back home. If the inheritance is gone, as I suspect that it is, I'll bring him back into the family at my own expense." And he would have said that because it would have been at his expense, you see, because everything that was left was his. And anything that his younger brother would have gotten, having been reinstalled in the family, would have been his. And so maybe that gives you an insight, a little bit better insight into why he was so distressed that his father had given his brother the ring and the robe and the fatted calf, because in reality, they were his. His brother had gotten everything that he had coming. But you see, that's what a true older brother would have done. But unfortunately, the young man had a Pharisee as an older brother. There is a way home. We need a big brother. And let's talk about why it's such a tragedy that his big brother was a Pharisee. And it's because, you see, forgiveness is not free. If all we ever knew was Act 1, the younger brother's story, then we would conclude that forgiveness was free. But Act 2 tells us it's not. Forgiveness is never free. It's never free. Someone has to pay. And in our story, whatever the younger brother received from this point on was at the expense of his older brother. And you see, by putting a flawed brother in this story, Jesus is creating within us a yearning for a true, loving older brother. We need one who doesn't just go from one country to another country to rescue us, but someone who will come all the way from heaven to earth. And the death that we owe is nothing short of our own death. And we stood by as Jesus was stripped of his robe of dignity so that we could be clothed with a dignity which we do not deserve. And as Jesus was treated as an outcast so that we could be brought into God's family with full benefits of sonship. He voluntarily left his home so that we could follow him back home. He satisfied sin's penalty so that we could be set free. He was mercilessly beaten so that we could be healed. By his stripes, we are healed. There was no way that our Father could bring us back home except at the expense of our older brother. The way of the cross leads home. There's no other way but this. Thank God we have such a brother. And I want to make two applications this morning. First one is, the world needs us to be true older brothers and not Pharisees. We feel that we become meek and lowly whenever we see some poor wretch and we reach out to them with pity, and maybe with a helping hand, and all the while we're saying to ourselves, "There but for the grace of God go I." When in reality, it is, "There go I." We look down on others who are away from God for a different reason, maybe for immorality, maybe for rebellion. And we think, "There but for the grace of God go I." But the truth is, whether you're an older brother or whether you're a younger brother, there go I. He's lost. It's obvious. He knows it. We know it. The whole world knows it. His life is a total mess. But so am I. And while it may be less obvious, it is no less true. And it is no less real. And his recklessness and his rebellion are costing him his life. And my self-righteousness is costing me mine. The ground at the foot of the cross truly is level. No one stands any higher or any closer to God's righteousness than anybody else. God help us to never become the older brother in Jesus' story. And the second application is to see how the love of a true older brother changes our lives. That's the real motivation. Can you see the incredibly beautiful solution to the obvious dilemma? And you say, what dilemma? Well, the dilemma that you have, could you possibly have two brothers that were more different than the older brother and the younger brother? And how in the world could you hope to motivate both of those boys to come home and join together in the Father's feast? And how could you ever hope to have the same motivation that would motivate them? Because they operated so differently. They thought so differently. Their thought process, the course that they had taken in their life, what was happening in their life, their reality, their surroundings, everything was incredibly different from one another. As totally opposed to one another as you could conceive. This sacrificial, costly love of Jesus Christ on the cross changed our lives. And what we've all been seeking, the greatness, or the security, or the love, or the honor, or the acceptance that we've all been seeking, it's all right here. It's in the cross. This love that casts out fear. Listen. Since we have now been justified by His blood, how much more shall we be saved from God's wrath through Him? For if when we were God's enemies, we were reconciled to Him through the death of His Son, how much more, having been reconciled, shall we be saved through His life? Romans chapter 5, verse 9 and 10. And we look at the choices before us from a human standpoint. And the choices seem to be either to turn from God and pursue the desires of our own heart, like the younger brother, are to repress those desires and do our moral duty like the older brother. But when we truly see what Jesus has done for us, our hearts are changed forever. It doesn't matter what your reality is. It doesn't matter where the path that you have chosen has led you. That's the motivation that changes your heart and changes your life. I think John Newton, who was the author of a song that is very near dear to our hearts, Amazing Grace, captured the idea in yet another song that he penned. And one of the stanzas says, "Our pleasure and our duty, though opposite before, since we have seen His beauty, have joined to part no more." Younger brothers and older brothers, look at the cross. Look at the cross. It will change your life. And I, if I be lifted up, will draw all men unto myself. That cross, that drawing power, if it's pulling on your heart to become a Christian this morning, or if as a Christian you've been away from home, look at the cross while we stand and sing.
thank each one of you being here this morning. We want to thank Ken for that wonderful lesson on the big brother and the younger brother, little brother. I have some announcements to bring to you this morning that for you to consider. We know that Glenn Addison